Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. Now, Wade, have you? Are you a podcast person?
Yes and no. I am in some ways, but not like a dedicated. I listen to this podcast. There's like one podcast I listen to all the time, and then
Radio
the rest
shorts.
Are just
yeah. I get it.
So, I write with this group. It's called ChristandPopCulture.com. Okay. And they have a couple podcasts each week, and so I usually listen to those. And then, you know, like, I'm a pastor, so I'll listen to preaching, you know, Timothy Keller, stuff like that. But not like, I'm not super dedicated on, you know, more than just those. But I listen, or, you know, I listen around.
Now, do you have experience actually being on podcasts?
No, this is it. This is the first one.
Really?
Wow. Mm-hmm. We're breaking this podcast.
Well,
there you go.
I actually listened to some of the Christ and pop culture stuff today while I was at the gym. I just want to put that out there. While I was at the gym today, working out for Jesus, you know, just honing my temple, if you will.
There you go. Inside and out.
That's right. We went, Sam, making myself crack up. So I was listening to that because I didn't realize they even existed. And I love anybody who does anything remotely culture engaging.
Yeah, man, they're great.
So, and I noticed that they basically linked a whole bunch of stuff from, or well, not a whole bunch of stuff, but they linked a thing or two from Keller.
Yeah.
And Keller is probably one of the triune of why I do this in the first place.
Nice.
His whole engaging culture, Center City and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, that's Christ and pop culture right there.
Yeah, so I listened to him just because I love to, like I said, make new connections. Mm-hmm. So I tried to figure out kind of who did the podcast most, see what they kind of talked about, see if they would have to do my own market research, you know, to see if someone would kind of fit into what we do. And so I think there was one guy, his name was spelled weird. I want to say not Cray. Maybe, but he looked like, the according to the website, the podcast guy. So,
oh yeah, he runs the podcast. No, I know who you're talking about. I'm still trying to learn all their names, but yeah, he does a podcast and he has little different guests on, you know, every time. And so yeah, I haven't been on there yet, but you know, it's a cool little podcast.
But yet. You're paving way.
I haven't even talked to them about that. So edit that part out.
Well, so can you say your last name for me?
Yeah, Bearden.
Okay, just like I thought it was.
Yeah, not Bearden, but Bearden.
But Bearden. Okay. Because see, being, I know you're from technically the South, being from Texas, but like we're the actual like South.
The South. Yeah.
And so I wanted to say Bearden because I'm lazy. Because
Texas is like a different world.
Well, it's like a state or it's a country of its own.
Oh yeah, it's our own country, man. It's awesome.
Well, that was the thing. My wife's actually been to Austin, and she said it was amazing. And
we got
married, and my dad lives in Dallas, or he lives outside of Dallas, the Dallas Fort Worth area. And so we would go there, and I was like, I thought you said Texas was amazing.
Well, the thing is, Austin is very different from the rest of Texas. So it's like it's a very different city. Mm-hmm. But I love it. I mean, I lived in Dallas. I live in Houston now. I visit Austin all the time. They're all different. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it is like its own country. You know, you have Austin's just a completely different city. It's, you know, kind of the hippie hipster area.
Mm-hmm. Well, not just
artsy, really cool artsy stuff. And it's a cool city.
Yeah. I've had two or three people link me like Christian film festivals or just film festivals in general, like held in Austin. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, this is obviously the place I should be going if I go to Texas.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's great for the arts. It's awesome. It's really good. In Dallas does, they do a lot of filming stuff in Dallas now. They shoot a lot more movies there, but, Austin's kind of like the arts capital of Texas.
Well, awesome. Maybe one day, Let's see. Did I have any questions before we kind of got started? Well, actually, I guess I need to know if you have any questions. Have you, and it don't hurt my feelings if you haven't, have you listened to any of the episodes of this podcast?
I have.
Oh,
yes,
you have?
I have. I've listened to a couple, actually.
Oh, man.
You sold that really well. I'm impressed.
So I – no, honestly, I have. I haven't listened to a lot of the recent ones. I have a 9-month-old child now, mm-hmm. so I am kind of limited on what movies I see immediately in the theaters. Mm-hmm. So I haven't listened to a ton. So I started listening to her, and then I had to turn it off because I haven't seen that yet. But I listened to Noah because you know I've watched that. And thanks for letting me come on. This is fun. I was looking forward to this.
No, I'm really glad. I actually was going to save a little. I had a little mini story about how glad I am that you're on the podcast.
Oh, nice. Okay, I'm looking forward to this.
So, if that's I can tell you have your notes ready, Griffin. You're completely note ready with your
I'm note ready.
I know. That's the way I love you, man.
I mean, here's the thing. Here's how note ready I am. I went back and read all of Brubaker's run this week.
Oh man!
Literally from start to finish.
Oh wow!
All volumes, even volume 5 and 6 that no one talks about because they were awful.
Mm-hmm.
But I read all of Brubaker's run this week. In preparation for talking about this,
yeah. So. Well, I know a little bit about the comics,
okay.
But I'm more the film. You know, I'll look at it from the film. So okay. we'll leave the comic book knowledge to you.
Well, yeah. I'll try to dive into both a little bit. So I think we'll have fun.
Yeah, and that's
awesome.
Mostly the besides the fact that he's a really cool guy, it's one of the reasons I like to have Griffin on when we do comic book movies.
Sweet, yeah, that's great.
Specific,
you
knowledge.
Need that.
All right, so. I'm going to not clap again because that definitely sounded awful. So if everyone's ready, I will get us started. Wade, you're ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
All right, Griffin, you're ready?
I'm ready. Player one, begin.
Well then, welcome to Real World Theology, episode 24. I am your host, Fizz. On this episode of the podcast, we take in the latest Marvel Cinematic Universe offering, Captain America, the Winter Soldier. In this film, Captain America, the Black Widow, and Sam Wilson, also known as the Falcon, join forces to uncover a conspiracy within S.H.I.E.L.D. while facing a mysterious assassin known as the Winter Soldier. For those of you who have seen the film, you know that this is probably a gross understatement of all the things going on in this movie. With all the underpinning of a top-notch spy thriller, this film is layered and arguably the best offering that Marvel has brought us to date. The narrative itself is dripping with post-9/11 allegory, while also tackling friendship, loyalty, selflessness, and what it means to be a good guy in a bad world. So, to help me talk about this movie, this week's team-up brings us our own superhero of comic knowledge, Griffin Kale.
Hello.
And joining forces and wits with him is the most important man at WadeBearden.com. Wade Bearden.
Hey, it's all about me, right?
That's right. Well, at least you're the most important person.
The most important, right?
So this is what I was telling you about. Wade, you're the prime example of everything that I love about the internet. No pressure, but so.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. Wow. The internet's big.
I'm not saying you're the only reason I love the internet, but you're an example of why I love the internet.
Oh, okay.
And what I mean by that is that we have such an accessibility to mm-hmm. ideas and thoughts out there, lots of which are like YouTube comments and are awful. But when you do something like we try to do here on the podcast, you can find people who are doing really awesome things very similarly to you. And I went out to find notes for some podcast that we did, I think, in the fall. And I don't remember what it was. It might have been Wolverine or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across this site where you were reviewing movies. And then I mm-hmm. went back to find something for something more recent. And there was no more reviews. And I was mm-hmm. like, Where are all the reviews? And so I found that you were a contributor. I found WadeBearden.com. And I was like, man, this guy really loves reviewing and talking about like the theology of film and doing it in a very engaging way. And so and it's almost like meeting someone for the first time in public. You just walk up and you're trying to say something cool, but you send them an email instead and you say, hey, do you want to be on my podcast? You don't know me. You probably never heard my podcast. And that person's like, hey, we have technology. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, so, man, I'm pumped about it. That's crazy. You know, you run across people on the internet, and yeah, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad to be here.
Well, like I said, I'm very glad to have you. I'm very glad you took time to be here with us. And now that I've got that really long story about how I find guests and stalk them to make them part of the show.
Let's, you don't know who's next, right?
That's right. Actually, we're to the point now where I think about half the people who have appeared on this podcast in a podcast that's gone less than a year, technically, are people that I've never met in person, but they're all people that I would love to meet in person because I think we would have a hell of a good time if we hung out.
Yeah.
Or we'd have a great conversation after a movie.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's all go find a movie and in the middle of the country and just go, and then we'll go talk about it afterwards.
We'll have to go to like Oklahoma City or something.
Yeah, there's not much in Oklahoma.
No, there's not.
I think they have movie theaters. You don't have to wear your shoes when you go to the movies, but I think they have movie theaters there.
Well, let's start this one off like we start most every other podcast with the simple question of, did you enjoy the movie? And as always, Wade, since you were on the Skype line, you get to go first.
Noob.
Oh, wow. Okay. You know, I love this movie. And I think it's the best Marvel movie to date.
And, which is my follow-up question.
Oh, okay. Well, I just went ahead and just took it.
No, go ahead.
I like all the Marvels. I loved Iron Man and the Avengers, but I feel like this is it's better than both of those films. And usually there's a propensity in the Marvel universe to make kind of the standalone films just the vehicle to get you to the Avengers movies, right? Mm-hmm. But I felt like I felt like it was that way with Iron Man 2. But with the Winter Soldier, it gets you there, right? It's taking you to Avengers 2. But at the same time, it's just a great story. It's such a good story. It's a good story with great action sequences, not action sequences with some story thrown in. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to talk about it because I loved it. I saw it twice already, and it's a really good film.
Well, how did you feel about the first Captain America movie?
You know, Captain America is, with the exception of maybe the Wolverine, my favorite Marvel comic book character. Mm-hmm. So I went in and I liked the film, but I thought it was just a good foundation. It was really steady. It wasn't super great. It wasn't bad. It was just kind of steady. And I felt like it kind of missed some opportunities, but I enjoyed it, right? But this one was like, it was the Captain America that I'd been waiting for. And yeah, so no, I thought it was much better than the first one.
Okay. And to be clear, better than the Avengers.
Yeah. And I might get some emails about that, but I don't care.
No. Like I said,
I thought it was better than the Avengers. I felt like the storyline of the Avengers was okay. I mean, it was good. The thing about the Avengers is you get to see all these characters fighting it out. Like, it's just awesome. But the storyline for Captain America 2 was much better than the storyline for the Avengers. And I stand by that.
Okay. Well, like I said, I think you'll find a lot of people who agree with you.
Yeah, no.
But is Griffin one of them?
I don't know. Let's find out.
My thing with Marvel movies right now is that I feel like the Avengers is kind of, in a way, its own thing. Each of the Avengers movies is going to be, in a way, its own thing because you have the band together. You know, all these great team, all these great characters are in one movie. It's like the first couple of X-Men movies, and they had the Wolverine thing. That movie, Wolverine Origins, was awful, regardless. But it wasn't going to be great because you had just seen X-1 and X-2, and those were like the team movies, and you had this like big band, and it was like watching the Beatles rather than just Paul McCartney. And so I felt like whenever it comes to the amount of time, like the amount of joy that I get out of watching the movie, Avengers wins. And it's going to win every time because I love watching Thor and Hulk kick the crap out of each other. Like, that was awesome. But whenever I'm with you, whenever it comes to story, by far Winter Soldier did everything that it was supposed to do whenever it came to a story in a Marvel book, in a Marvel movie. And I think in so many ways they translated what the heart of the story was in the comics and what great comics are all about by saying, like, here is a character, let's build that character as much as we can. And so I think that's why the first Captain America was so a lot of people didn't like it because they were like, why do I need to see this? It's like, well, are you Captain America? Do you know who Captain America is? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, well, most people don't. Like, the vast majority of people have no idea who this character is other than just seeing him in cartoons. Yeah. So when you talk about introducing that character as a movie element, it's like, we need to set a full backstory. And to do that, it's going to be kind of boring because the World War II stuff isn't all that enjoyable. There is a lot of really cool stories that people have written, but there isn't a lot to talk about because for the most part, it was just him on the ground. There was no, there wasn't a lot of people to fight. It was like the Red Skull. You eventually had like the Nazi super soldiers. But at that point, you also had the invaders too. Mm-hmm. And the invaders, for those of you who don't know, are like the original Human Torch and Namor and then the other human, the other Torch. And so you kind of had these, this extra team that just to introduce so many concepts at once would have been way too much for the average moviegoer. They'd have been like, who are all these people?
When the first Captain America movie, most of the action was kind of done through a montage.
Exactly. And that's, and that's kind of, I think that that was more of a throwback to the old school action films rather than saying, we're just going to like quickly get this movie out the door. I don't think they were trying to make it not appealing. I think they were trying to make it appear to be a 1940s World War II action movie. And I really appreciate it. I loved, that was probably my first one of my favorite one of the phase one, stuff that Marvel did because I just love that character and I love the way that they presented it and Peggy Carter and introducing that concept. I think that that, like, there are plenty of people who wish to God that somehow that she had made it out of this, not, you know, she had somehow gotten frozen too. there's so many people who've been frozen at this point in Captain America's lore, you know, Bucky included. It would have been great if she could have gotten frozen, but, I'll get to more about that later. Cause I think that that's probably my least, that's one of my least favorite parts of the movie is something to do with her, but well, I love the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. After I watched that movie, you know, like a couple days later, I'd be having a good day and then I'd remember the end of the movie and that he never got to have that dance.
Yeah.
And it would just ruin the whole day for me. Like it was just, that was it.
Yeah.
Well, and that to me was the power of the first movie.
Yeah.
It didn't have a happy ending. I mean, and if we think about this movie, and I want to say this just in case there are new listeners, typically we have a spoiler alert from the time we start recording.
Yeah. Because it's kind of assumed that we're going to talk about everything.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about the narrative themes of the movie in depth without talking about what happens during the movie, through the entire course of the movie. So that's out there. So Wade, if there's anything that you want to say, then feel free. But I think one of the things about the first movie is without it, the conflict in the second movie seems very superficial. Like the Captain America's conflict.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, so I'll say this from the get go. I hated the way that they developed Bucky and in the first movie.
The first movie.
I don't think that, like, I didn't even feel any connection to him coming into Winter Soldier in the movies. In the comics, and I'll quickly kind of get this stuff out of the way so that way I don't bore everybody to death. In the comics, there's like a few things that are assumed. One is that Ben Parker dies and he's never coming back. Another one is that Bucky Barnes dies and he's never coming back. And so whenever
Ben Parker, for those people who don't know,
is Peter Parker's father or uncle who took care of him while his parents were doing whatever story you believe. They were either scientists Peter Parker's Spider-Man.
Okay.
And those movies are put out by Fox and Sony. And it's just a whole debacle. Long story short, Peter Parker. Yeah. Anyways. So but in the comics, that was always an assumed thing and that was never going to change. And so whenever you had basically this, and that's also the same thing's true for, like, you know, the Wayne, you know, Bruce Wayne, who's Batman, his parents dying, they're never coming back. These things that are assumed. And then you had Ed Brubaker, who does, like, write scripts and for movies and does a lot of that stuff, but also writes amazing comics. Captain America, book called Criminal, for those of you who like pulp stuff, Fatale, and some similar things that are also pulpy noir stuff. But whenever he came to Captain America, that was what he was known for, was pulp. And so he took that and said, I'm going to make a spy thriller that everybody will love. And in doing so, he brought back one of those characters that was supposed to be gone forever. And in a way that wasn't just, oh, he's back. Because he'd been gone for, at this point in comics, 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so for him to bring him back in the way that he did in such like a grand gesture of like, this is a great character who deserves credit for the amount of just personality that he's added to Steve, who's, you know, Captain America, the current iteration of Captain America, for the personality that he's added to him, just because Steve's has searched for Bucky. He's looked for like what happened because he didn't know, because he died and then Steve went into the battle. And then, mm-hmm. you know, so to talk about that, I think that, it's just such a cool thing in the comics, and they did not mm-hmm. translate that well in the movies. And mm-hmm. so I wish that they had done better. And so I wish that I cared more that Bucky was gone,
mm-hmm.
And then back. But I feel like in this movie, they kind of did that. It was kind of fast tracked, and I understand why they had to fast track, because they probably realized we didn't really develop that character well. but mm-hmm. I feel like in this movie, they did a great job of quickly fast tracking you, catching you up. There's who's who this character is. This is why he's important.
Yeah. And I didn't know a lot of the Bucky backstory.
Yeah.
So it was such a good, they built so much conflict because he's not just alive. It's like, oh, he's back. He's back, and he's a really bad person. You know, he's
really good at being a bad person.
Yeah, he's assassinated how many people? You know, he's worked for the KGB. You know, all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and so that was such good conflict that now, as the film ends, you know, not only has Bucky got to figure out who he is, but he's got to deal with what's going on, what he did in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, all this stuff, and so I think it's gonna be a good one for Captain America 3. You know, there's gonna be a lot. There's going to be a lot of conflict there, and I think it's going to make a good story.
Yeah, and I think when you juxtapose that character with who the Black Widow was and her history with the KGP as well, and her history of like having to deal with what she did before mm-hmm. she, you know, and she didn't mm-hmm. forget it. Like, she's not remembering it and being like, oh, now she knows what she's done.
Oh yeah,
and so. Question.
Okay, so I think I just had a
epiphany.
An epiphany.
Oh, epiphany. Go for it.
Because you know, was it Sebastian Stan?
Yes.
The guy that played the actor that plays Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
He signed for like a non-movie deal,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking
they're going to do a Cap or a Black Widow.
I was gonna say. Bucky.
I mean, Winter Soldier.
That's
in the
opening.
Comics.
That's the opening scene in a Black Widow movie.
Yeah.
That story that she told in Captain America, in this Captain America movie,
mm-hmm.
where she got shot through and now looks terrible in a bikini. Yes. Like that's the Scarlet. Opening. That's the opening scene to the Black Widow movie. You know, well, at least in my mind, that should be,
because
you're not revealing anything we don't already know,
mm-hmm.
but you're jumping into the action. You're learning what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, the actual Captain America, Winter Soldier movie to me, I really did enjoy it. I still don't think, kind of like Griffin was saying, I don't think I enjoy it as much as I do watching the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
But I also agree, Wade, that the story of the Avengers was pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had to get the band together.
Yeah,
talked about this before. It's not something. I mean, they had to get the band together, and they had to do it in a way that was quick. And I mean, it still took up a 2.5-hour movie.
And so because of that, if I have to rank them, I'm still going to rank the Avengers first. But because mm-hmm. as good of a story as I think that the new Captain America was, as much as it wasn't a placeholder, as it
not
gave Captain America his own depth, as it mm-hmm. still found a way while giving him his entire own story, introduced new characters, introduced real danger, took on a different genre, and still found a way to set up Avengers 3. Mm-hmm. I mean, Avengers 2.
Well, I mean, there's something about that iconic shot of all the Avengers in downtown New York,
mm-hmm.
and they're like gearing up for battle. I mean, that's an achievement, you know, not only for the film itself, but for filmmaking in general, to get all of that together. So no, I can definitely see why, you know, people are going to love the Avengers. Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about that too. Going into the Avengers, the one criticism before anyone ever saw the movie was this film, there's no way this film can work because you can't have that many A-list actors all be the main character.
Well, it's like
in a movie.
Yeah, it's like you get all the best players on a team. They don't work because there's too much ego.
Yeah.
And they dealt with that ego. And that's the thing I love about it. They didn't ignore, mm-hmm. you know, Joss Whedon didn't ignore the fact that there was a crap ton of ego in the room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of it. And he's like, let me talk about this and let's deal with every bit of it,
let's make it happen.
Or start dealing with it. Because we're going to see more of it, I guarantee it, in the future movies.
Oh yeah.
But because I have a feeling the Civil War movie is going to happen, which is a story where the mutant registration takes place, and there are two sides to that coin, and one side.
Well, it won't be mutant registration.
Or yeah, not yet. legally, superhero registration, not just mutant registration, but superhero registration.
Yeah,
and I think those things will continue. I mean, that's what's great about comics is that you love watching, you know, Tony Stark deal with the fact that he's an alcoholic. You love watching, you know, Captain America deal with the fact that he can't remember who he is.
Well, see, when you talk about Tony Stark, that's kind of the first Iron Man movie really struck me because it took the character, and the character, even though he went on a journey, and Tony Stark goes on a journey, he still never departs who he is.
Yeah,
and I think there's a quote. I don't think there's a quote. I know there's a quote actually.
I think there's a quote that says this
from Matt Goldberg from Collider.com in his review of The Winter Soldier that basically summed up what I thought because it basically talks about Captain America and keeping Captain America true to who Captain America is because he says that Captain America, the Winter Soldier, could have made the character more twisted and melodramatic by plunging him into a darker, more complex world. Instead, Captain America isn't corrupted by the present day. He's not even tested. His innate goodness is a beacon. It's a bulwark against corruption. The Winter Soldier celebrates the good guy. And that's exactly how I felt. I was afraid going into the second Captain America movie, or going into the Winter Soldier, and I was definitely afraid that I was going to see someone take a good character who is good, and the thing we love about him is he's the hero. He's not the anti-hero. He's not the conflicted. I mean, he's got conflict. He's not perfect, but he's a good guy. And they were going to try to make him like Batman. They were going to try to Zack Snyder him and make him like Man of Steel, make him gritty. But he wasn't. In this movie, he rose above it. And because of that, Captain America, even though he's probably not my favorite comic book character, he is my favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe character to watch.
And I think one of the cool things about it, too, is they also introduced, I mean, your biggest villain. Well, one of your biggest villains. I think you have two in this movie. But one of your biggest villains becomes very much an anti-hero who is becoming a hero in Bucky, who is, you know, he's killing all these people. He's doing all these bad things. But at the end, he's going to try to figure out who he is and who he was. And, you know. Spoiler alert, I mean, comics, it's obviously very different. And I'll tell you that this movie is very different from the story they told in the comics. So me saying this doesn't spoil anything for movies. But in the comics, eventually you have Captain America dies and he goes away. And Bucky puts on the suit of Captain America not long after he came back. So he's, you know, a few years into being Bucky again, and he puts on Captain America's suit to become Captain America for the world. And that's kind of a concept that there's been multiple Captain Americas, that while Captain America was asleep or frozen, there were Captain Americas all during that time, and nobody knew that Steve Rogers was gone besides the government, or that Captain America, the original one, was gone besides the government. But
going back to his journey as a character, it's so easy for them to put the demons inside of him and have him battling some sort of demon, but he's really battling the demons outside of him. And that's why it's really difficult to bring Captain America to the screen, because he's such a good guy. You know, he's really not making a transformation. He's, like you said, he's trying to transform the world. And so that's really hard on a cinematic standpoint. But at the same time, he's an easy character to love because he's like, man, he's just a good old boy, right? And so I appreciate that about Captain America, and I think that's why he's, you know, one of my favorite Marvel superheroes, because he's just a good guy, and it's hard to not like him.
Well, I mean, do you think that's one of the reasons people this movie's making tons of money? I mean, Iron Man made a lot of money because Robert Downey Jr. is funny. Thor made a pretty decent amount of money, but people don't go to see Thor. They go to see Loki.
That's true.
Because he's the anti-hero. I mean, do people really want to see just a good guy in this culture of the anti-hero, you know, of the Breaking Bad, of the Dexter, of the Bruce Wayne, you know, like, do people just want a hero?
I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it. People just, it's like, oh, he's just a good guy. Like, and you can kind of relate to that in some ways. Like, he's just an average guy plucked out of obscurity who became a superhero. I mean, he was nothing. And so I think that relates to people. And then just the fact that it's a good movie. I mean, it's just making money because it's the screenplay was done very well. Yeah.
It was a really good script.
You know, and they were working on it for a long time, and they put a lot of effort into it. And I think that's part of it too. I think it's both.
Well, and I think the first movie did such a good job of showing him as like a naive good guy. He was just good for the sake of being good. He like jumps on the grenade and like he does things that are very just almost like you're too good. And this movie kind of it developed him as a character who had seen enough to not be cynical, but to not trust everything.
Yeah.
And I think that that's more realistic is like he's a human who's also like he's normal and he's good. But he's not jumping on grenades, but he's a good guy.
Yeah, but he still doesn't lose his essence.
No, not at all. I mean, he still would jump on a grenade for you, though. Yeah. And that's the thing is the cool thing is that at this point, though, he's become more of a just more of like almost an adult. In the first movie, he's like just this kid who's like, I just want to be the very best that no one ever was. and in this movie, he's kind of more like, I want to be the best and really care for the people because no one else is doing it.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, from where I sit, it looks like his message never really changed, just became a more mature version of that message.
Yeah.
His message in the first one was, well, I don't like bullies.
Yeah.
You know, and in this one, it's still, I don't like bullies.
Just bigger bullies. Much bigger.
He realizes that America could be a bully. You know, that S.H.I.E.L.D. could be a bully. And so he's realizing that things are a little more complicated than he thought. But that essence, that foundation that he has is still the same. Yeah. Yeah. There's right and there's wrong. It's just the lines are blurry on who's right and who's wrong. You know, it's not the, America is in, you know, in the right, the World War II and everything like that. It's, wow, we could be kind of the bad guys, right? Who rule by fear instead of freedom.
Well, I was going to say, if we take that one step further, anytime, and I think we actually might have talked about this in Man of Steel a little bit and probably how they, and I think in our eyes on the podcast, I think failed to do it. When you start talking about, well, Captain America is a good guy, these guys are bad guys, you know, you start attributing goodness to a set of attributes that are almost like foundational truths that I think when we go to a theater, society would agree are good. This very hard to define, especially culturally, term good. But once you take that outside of the theater, good starts to mean a whole lot of different things to a whole lot of different people. Are we still postmodern? Are we post-postmodern now? You know? Mm-hmm. Do people really want to believe that there are truths, that there are good and bad things?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a matter of whether we want them to or not. I think deep down we know it, right? And you know, C.S. Lewis talks about this in Mere Christianity. You know, like deep down we know these things. We know that there's right. We know that there's wrong. Even those people who commit wrong know that there's right and wrong. They don't like to be double crossed. We understand, we have this foundational sense of morality in all of us. And even though we don't want to think that it's there, when we go to the theater, we realize that it is there. I think that this is one of those films where we go and we connect and we say, man, I wish I was like Captain America or he's a good guy. Even though we don't live practically like that, those more values are there. And we understand them. It's just hard to fathom or find them sometimes, but they're deep down inside of us.
Well, it's like, this really, really smart guy named Wade Bearden said on his review.
Uh-oh. don't trust everything you read online.
What? It's on the internet. It has to be true.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this isn't from Wikipedia. This is from like a real site.
Yeah, .com.
So, but
it's not just somebody putting it up there from their home, right? You know, like Wikipedia.
No. He works a desk job.
That's right.
So, in his office at home.
But to what you basically just said, like in your review, you said culture changes. Ideas are developed, but right and wrong, freedom and tyranny, they stay the same.
Yeah, and you know, I don't like to make films necessarily like an object lesson in the sense like, mm-hmm. oh, this is an illustration. But I think the themes are right there for us. Like we see Captain America, and he takes his ideals from the 1940s, his morality to the 1940s, and he's transplanted into the modern world. And we find out that you know, they're like, hey, you need to get with the times, you need to do this, you need to do that, and the methods are a little different, right? So he has new weapons, he's got a new suit, but that those ideals from the 1940s are very much still true. And I think the themes there are kind of like a reflection of morality in general. And, you know, if you do stretch it to the Christian faith, right, it's kind of the same things. Like we have these ideals that are looked at as sometimes outdated, you know, whether it's what we believe about behavior or this or that, you know, they're seen as outdated, but morality in a sense, there's a foundational truth that doesn't change. And so I think that's what Captain America in a sense can kind of show us through the themes, like freedom and tyranny. You know, it looks differently in the modern world, but we still have that sense of morality there. And so I felt like it did a very good job of that. It's taking someone with what we would say is outdated morality and realizing it's not outdated. Like it's as fresh as it's always been. And for us as Christians, I believe that same thing. You know, it seems to be outdated and sure methods change, but those foundational truths stay the same.
Yeah, we might not go around handing out tracts anymore.
Yeah.
But we still believe the foundational truth of the messages found therein.
Mm-hmm.
Well, depending on which track it was. Some of them maybe have been a little far-fetched.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, we still believe in truth. And as culture changes, it may become less and less cool to say that you believe in this or you don't believe in that, or that, you know, you follow this or you act a certain way or you treat people a certain way because of this or that. But that doesn't make it less right or wrong because society doesn't like it. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can't do in Russia right now that,
yeah,
you know, you might be killed or whatever, or thrown in prison for life, and then killed quietly, you know, that because you can or can't do them, they should be perfectly fine or not. Hey, speaking of Russia, see my transition here.
Communism, right?
Communism, KGB. People that we have fights with in America. People that we have fights with in America. Terrorism. 9/11. Boom. 9/11 allegory.
I thought you were going to Black Widow KGB. That was, but you changed it up there.
I did. We can actually talk about Black Widow. Like, how did you? how did you? I don't want to say like her character. That seemed too simple. But how much do you think her character added to this movie? And what do you think it added?
One of my favorite parts, and I'll talk more about this at the end, but one of my favorite parts of the movie was the interaction between Captain America and Black Widow, because, you know, she's so sarcastic, and he can't, you know, he's a little sarcastic as well. And so to see them bouncing off each other, I think it added a lot of humor to the film, and a lot of depth, because she's dealing with things in her past in a different way. And she's saying, I've got to hide these things. I can't be true to myself. And he's saying, you know, no, you need to be honest. You need to be upfront about this. So I thought she did a great job. In Iron Man 2, I wasn't a huge fan of Black Widow. And then in the Avengers, I was like, okay, you know, she could be a cool character. After this film, I was like, okay, I could see her doing a standalone film. Like, her character was that developed. And what's so fascinating is there's still so much we have to explore with her character. Mm-hmm. Like, we've only been given little pieces here and there.
Yeah, and I think that's what, I mean, Marvel and, I mean, all the comic book industry has been looking for years. How can we diversify this universe? There are very few popular female characters that we can put a standalone book behind and say, here, go. Wonder Woman's one of those characters. Black Widow has been one of those characters at times.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have, if someone would have asked you before, like, this Marvel push would have come out, if Black Widow was one of the female characters you would have seen eventually getting her own movie.
Yeah,
she would have probably not been on
from
that
Marvel.
List.
I mean, from Marvel, there just really aren't many. There really aren't. I mean, there's another character, Miss Marvel or Captain Marvel, depending on which book you're looking at currently. That's probably the most popular female character in Marvel. I mean, I just don't know that Marvel really...
Spider-Woman.
That's not... I mean, and that's the thing is, like, there are these characters that they try to introduce and say, like, here, check out this guy or this girl. But there really just aren't any in Marvel. Like I said, DC has Batgirl. They have... And that's Sue Storm, but she's on a team. You couldn't give Sue Storm her own book. And so that's... And that's my thing is, like, Marvel really pushing hard to say this character... is important. They put her in Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Avengers. Was she in Iron Man? No, she wasn't in Iron Man 3. So you move on to Winter Soldier. I'm sure she'll be featured in, you know, movies going forward beyond just the Avengers and Captain America movies. So, oh, whoops, sorry.
So you think that, I mean, Wade, it sounds like you're thinking that a Black Widow movie could succeed at this point, right?
Yeah. I mean, if it's not done well, it's not going to be a hit. But if it's done well, the character is there. People are going to want to go see her, and I think that if they make a good movie, it's going to be. I mean, it's going to be great. There's the marketing is already there for her character, and it's not driven by sexuality. So you're going to be able to take your kids to see a female superhero film. And not have reservations about it because they've already shown her character in the past, and you're comfortable with that. So I think it could be. I think it could be a really good hit. I'm hoping it happens.
Well, let me ask you this: you say that, and then let me ask you this: what does a Black Widow movie look like? It's Black Widow standalone. Maybe she has like a teammate, but it's not some. It's like her in Captain America. She's not the most important character, and she is the most powerful in that movie. What does it look like?
Well, the thing with I think they can make a good Black Widow movie, and I think they can even add someone like Hawkeye to it.
But I don't think that's a family friendly movie. But I think that's a Black Ops. That's what is in the comics referred to as Secret Avengers, and it's Black Ops street level. SHIELD puts out basically like they take contracts to put out hits on really bad guys.
Which is the only place where I diverge from what you just said, Wade, because you described up to the point where you said it's a movie where people can take their children to a Black Widow movie. If I think of what I would want to see, what would make me interested in seeing a Black Widow movie, unfortunately, is probably a movie that could be tastefully done, but it's probably a slightly over-sexualized her undercover seducing and killing people in very covert, not hero type ways. She would have to be, I think, the anti-hero.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, she would be a Catwoman, but way better than Catwoman. Yeah. I mean, type movie where you have this person who is definitely breaking the law by everyone's standards. Because you talk about like Bruce Wayne and Batman. Batman breaks the law, but he's a vigilante, so it doesn't count. He's okay.
And I could see I'm like not super familiar with her in the comics, but I could see I would hate to see her journey as a character, you know, her making transitions, her character development to kind of go back to you know, the secret ops, assassinations, that type of thing. I guess I could see it as more.
You don't think it would be an origin story?
I would hope it wouldn't be an origin story. I think it would be cool to be like kind of a Mission Impossible from here on out. Because for me, I've already know where she's going. I know where she is. So I guess I wouldn't want to see an origins. But if it is an origins, I could see it being a darker film. Yeah, if it is an origins film.
Okay. I mean, and I think. I like the idea you talk about a Mission Impossible thing with like her going on a mission and like it not being her killing someone.
Because that would be the best of both worlds. It would be Mission Impossible without Tom Cruise.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's win-win.
Yeah, it really
is. It's a win-win situation. Yeah,
it definitely is. But I mean, and that's in the comics, she has basically – currently she has a new book that started – I mean, it's about 5 issues in now.
Does she look like Scarlett Johansson in the comic now?
Yeah, she's looked like Scarlett Johansson the whole time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. It's – I mean, they cast that perfectly. I mean, it's not – but you know, she's basically trying to kind of make up for all the good people that she hurt whenever she was with the KGB by killing bad people or going after bad people. Not killing always, but going after bad people. And a lot of it's like with a sniper rifle. I mean, she's
well, that would be great because that's exactly the kind of movie we want to talk about in this this podcast. Objective morality. We get to break that down.
There you go. Well, do you think Disney will make a film like that?
No. I mean, I don't. I mean, that's what the character is. I think that the likelier of the two of the scenarios is that it's going to be if she gets one, which I think she will. It's going to be Mission Impossible type movie. It's going to be
I think that's the only way.
Yeah, it's going to be like a, you know, James Bond type thing, and that's and that's like a completely great. That'd
it
be
could
a
be
great
so
movie.
Great. Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, in it, and clearly Marvel has said our movie universe and our 616 comic universe are two different things. So 616 is like what you read mostly on the shelves. The only other real universe that people read on the shelves is Ultimate. But yeah, the Marvel movie universe is completely separate, and they've said that from the get-go, that we're going to try to emulate a little bit some of these characters in the books, and the books will kind of emulate some of the stuff in the movies. But like Robert or Iron Man is funny now where he didn't used to be. Like prior to Iron Man, he wasn't a funny character at all, and now he's like goofy and funny.
Before he was just an alcoholic.
Yeah, before he was just an alcoholic, an angry rich alcoholic who was still. I mean, yeah. So now he's funny, but I mean that's a great thing though that the movies have brought. So I'm not downing at all. I love what the movies have done for comics. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's doubtful that Disney would do that, and I think that that's a good thing. I mean, I like that Disney is making these movies accessible to families. I love that because for me, that opens up for them the genre of comics, graphic novels to children. And and for me, my love of comics and the reason I went into retail with comics for about a year, and I loved it because the biggest thing for them was like, we want people to like, yeah, we're glad that we can make sales and sell these to 40-year-old men, but we want to open the door for kids who don't like books and don't like to just read paper words on paper. Like they want pictures and action. And so I love that Marvel Studios has said, we want to make this accessible.
Well, I think that's that point is something that I haven't really given a lot of thought to, but I think is one of the reasons that these Marvel movies are so successful because they're accessible. They're, besides a couple little things throughout the Marvel Cinematic Universe to this point, I would say that I would be completely comfortable if I were to have kids of, you know, of a certain age, the ones that I think could like hang, like hold it together in the theater of crowded people.
Yeah. They wouldn't just like be crying.
Yeah. I wouldn't have a problem taking them to any of these movies. And I think when you tell a story, to make it friendly to children, but still give something to the adults to hold on to. I think that was basically like the Pixar formula. You know, you're basically making a story that, since you can't just make it the Expendables, you know, or you just can't throw a rated R movie out there and whenever you run out of ideas, people just explode. You actually have to come up with a story that's deep on multiple levels. And I think, you know, you would get that even in this movie. Because you get like that spy thriller, double cross, is he not, who's doing what, will they, won't they. But it's still like a fun action movie with very straightforward, I'd say, morals and a theme of good versus bad that even children can kind of pick up on.
So what do you feel like, Wade and Mikey, what do you guys feel like is the theme that they're trying to get at by turning SHIELD, this paramilitary installation from the government ran a military group that's kind of supposed to oversee the superheroes in some ways, turning them into the biggest villain? I mean, Hydra, whenever we talk about the biggest villain, Hydra is it. I mean, they're the exact opposite of SHIELD in every way. In that they're huge and they have a lot of power, but they're using it for really bad things.
Well, even then, I think that's the adult story. That's okay. That's the adult part of the story.
That's how they interest.
That's the spy thriller.
Because they're like, you get this politically, right, guys?
Yeah.
Like, what this means mm-hmm. for, like, what we're trying to say politically.
Well, no, and I'd be interested to see what Wade has to say, because I think one of the most obvious scenes in the entire movie that picks up on the theme that I think older people, not like old people, but, you know, late adults, like college, you know, whatever, they're going to pick up on that whole, like I said, that post 9/11 allegory. So one of the biggest scenes in this movie that everyone points to is when Captain America and Nick Fury are riding the elevator. You know, Nick Fury's telling them, you know, about his dad who carried the gun, or his grandpa, was it his grandpa?
Grandpa.
His grandpa mm-hmm. who carried the satchel of money with a gun in it. And then he shows him the helicarriers. You know, and they talk about freedom, and then, you know, Captain America is not buying it. You know, he's like, this isn't freedom, it's fear. So, like, when you see that scene, was that almost too obvious, Wade?
Well, I mean, it's definitely hinting at, you know, the NSA stuff, the drone stuff mm-hmm. that we're going through right now.
Would you hold it to just right now, though?
Well, I mean, it's a big talking point right now. Mm-hmm. It's something that, like, I mean, we're talking with the Snowden and all that stuff, and the jokes about the NSA reading your emails and everything like that. You know, it's a big thing. It's like, okay, is it Big Brother? You know, is it 1984? And so that's a huge theme, and it's something that it kind of carries throughout the film. Like, and I don't know if this is too much of a stretch. But I read one review, and it was basically saying, like, Captain America is the ideal, you know, the ideal America, you know, it's in its heyday. The Winter Soldier is almost an allegory for what America has become in this story. Killing to protect, in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of a major theme, and it's a big talking point in the movie. It's like, okay, where is self-defense, where is protecting freedom, and then where's the line for Big Brother, where's the line for the invasion of privacy, world police type thing? And so what a good film does is it's not super preachy and say, hey, this is the line we have to straddle, but it gives you thoughts, and I think this film kind of does that. It gives you some thoughts saying, hey, this is all the stuff going on, like, what's the answer? And it doesn't give us a clean answer, but it gives us some things to think about.
I like the stretch. I think it's a good stretch. I think to say that, you know, that those two are allegories for each other, I mean, I think it's great. And I think that to some degree, I think that that's what makes that final scene post first credits with Bucky kind of walking through, the museum and trying to kind of figure out who am I, who was I, who did I used to be, and who am I now, what have I become. I think that that's such a good, I mean, I think that's why that somebody calling that an allegory works, because it's like for so many people, we're looking and saying, who are we anymore? Are we going after, and I'm not going to get into, like, my political opinions on it. I'm just saying, to some degree, I think that it's like, are we going after the Nazis who are, like, are we going after those people who are the worst and they're killing people for their own, like, furtherment of their power? Mm-hmm. Or are we going after people because financially it benefits us to do so?
Mm-hmm. And there's no easy answers, I think. And I think the film doesn't really give us one. We're kind of left like Bucky, like,
yeah.
Well, who are we?
Yeah, who are we? I mean, am I supposed to be the Winter Soldier? Or am I supposed to be Bucky Barnes, like sidekick to Captain America? Am I somewhere in the middle? And in the comics, I think I love it because Bucky becomes the Winter Soldier still after the fact. He's still this kind of in between, doing kind of what Black Widow has done for years and playing this character who's supposed to take out the bad guys but be a good guy. And I think it adds just such a depth to the character that I hope they continue in the comics. I think that it would make it, I think it's great that they introduced this character, and I was so surprised that they did it And they did it with so much support from Brubaker. Brubaker was actually in the movie and helped kind of write on the script and help them kind of like figure out where they were going to go with this. And I was like, man, that's awesome that they would take this character and bring him back when they could have done, you know, more Red Skull. Because Red Skull's a fun character to watch. Like, he's great. Like, he is in the comics, he is a Steve Rogers clone, went kind of wrong. He's another super soldier. Mm-hmm. And it's great to watch. But I'm glad that they chose to like take this another direction. I hope they continue to do so. But yeah, I love that allegory. I think it's great. I didn't think about that, and so I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like they're kind of hinting at that, and which sets it up pretty cool for Age of Ultron, because the Avengers kind of have to get together on their own. Shield's gone. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they kind of have to do it by themselves, and I think that's going to be an interesting storyline.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see just how well they. I mean, yeah, I think at this point they're all separated. Clearly, they're not together in each other's movies. They haven't really shown up in each other's movies besides Black Widow being in this one. I mean, they're talking about each other kind of, but they're not really together, which is
yeah.
Is common for, I mean, it's exactly the way the comics work, is that they don't just all, they're not, it's not every book is Avengers.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think to get them back together for another big movie it'll be interesting to see how Joss gets it all together.
Yeah.
I'm sure if anybody's capable of doing so, it's him. He's, I freaked out this week because someone told me about 2 weeks, 3 weeks after the fact, the April Fool's article about them Netflix doing more Firefly. And they told me, and I was like, yes. And then they were like, oh, it's April Fool's article. I was like,
oh man,
are you kidding me? You can't just like get somebody's hope flips like that.
That's not even an April Fool's joke. That's just April Cruel.
Yeah. That's just like, that's mean. That's so mean spirited. But yeah, I mean, I think it'll be so great to see how just, you know, how that comes together. And I think that they're all coming to it with very, very different than what they were in the last movie. You have Tony Stark, who I think will still be kind of dealing with some of the PTSD that he was dealing with at the beginning of the third movie. You have Captain America, who's coming off the heels of like my best friend turned dead, now turned double cross spy is here. I mean, Thor, who's going to have to deal with Loki for the rest of his life.
But he doesn't know it.
There's this scene in the comics where he meets like his future self, like an old man of himself. Thor does, and he asks him like, "Can you just give me some piece of information before I go back? Like just something, just like to help me get through this." He's like, "Kill Loki as soon as you can, because he will never not hurt you." Which is such an, I mean, I love that about that character because they were friends. They were childhood friends. Mm-hmm. And that's such a great thing about that character. So, yeah.
And what has the Hulk been doing this whole time?
Well,
that's going to be interesting
the
too.
The cool thing is Ruffalo's said he's never going to, he hasn't signed on for a solo film. Ruffalo hasn't. He's only signed on for the Avengers so far. I'll be interested to see if that character ever really has if Hulk has another solo film.
No, third time's a charm, right?
Well, that's the thing. I like God, we're getting way off topic now. But, like, I like the second.
You like Edward Norton?
I like the Edward Norton movie.
Okay.
I think it actually holds up pretty well. I mean, the Hulk is not a super interesting character unless you do some crazy kind of things with him.
Yeah.
I
think Ruffalo plays a better Hulk, though. I think he fits the nerd kind of, like, quiet to himself genre better than Norton did. So I think he would make it better, but I'm with you. Like it does hold up. Like it's not great by any stretch, but it does hold up.
Yeah. But I like the movie, but yeah. I do like Ruffalo as Bruce Banner more.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, we all forget the first one though.
Which one?
Exactly. But
Lou Ferrigno? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Well, but so that's the thing that I'm also interested to see because how are they going to get together in the wake of S.H.I.E.L.D. not being there? And what this whole allegory, the 9/11 or the post 9/11 allegory does is it creates this problem for Captain America or for this particular individual character in this movie that is huge enough that it's worth having a movie about, but it's just sly enough that we're not 100% curious why all the other Avengers aren't there.
Yeah. The only explanation I can have is it happened so fast, shields down, he couldn't communicate with them. I've been trying to think of explanations.
Well, he has the Avengers card though.
It's like
a little card, you can just hit it and then it tells everybody they need help.
Well, it's partly because of the quickness of it, because at first I was thinking it was the quickness of it, but then Nick Fury tells him not to trust anyone. So he doesn't even trust Black Widow.
Well, because he doesn't really know them. I mean, we look at it as like, we know these characters and they're all good guys, but like Captain America met them for one mission.
Yeah.
And Tony Stark met them for one mission. And
Tony Stark's the one that made the improvements to make the helicarriers.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows if he's working for him. Mm-hmm. He's probably not going to ever go physically ask Hulk to help him, you know, and then who can get a hold of Thor unless Thor wants to be gotten a hold of.
That's true.
I think I will say this, to kind of continue the very, very end, the last scene after all the credits, I think is such an interesting thing because you set up Quicksilver and Wanda or Scarlet Witch as like characters in the Marvel Universe. And that's something that we've known about. If you've been following Age of Ultron, you knew that was coming. But I think to set up those characters and to set up this idea of like the future stuff, I think it's just so great the way that they've built this universe. And I think that they're continuing to slowly build mm-hmm. it. They didn't give you the Avengers team like it is now, where there's like everybody's an Avenger. Who's not an Avenger? I don't know a single Marvel character who's not at some point.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for Spider-Man.
Don't hurt us like that. Or it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Come on.
We're all just going to be sad.
Give it up, Sony.
Yeah, for real. But I mean, I think that the way Marvel is taking care of this and they're Kevin Feige, who's over Marvel Studios, somebody did an interview with him a while back, and he has a map, kind of a flowchart map, along the back of his office that's about 27 films that they have already mapped out that they're mm-hmm. going to for sure do. And I'm just like, wow, that's awesome. As a comic book fan who, like, you know, was surprised whenever, you know, Spider-Man came out, the original one, I'm like, wow, the fact that there's an Avengers movie and then another Avengers movie
mm-hmm.
and a Guardians of the Galaxy movie that I'm not sure most people are like, who are the Guardians of the Galaxy?
I don't even care.
Why do I care?
I just want to see that movie.
I'm just going to see it because it looks awesome.
Oh, it looks great. It looks great.
Well, we're getting to about that point in the show, even though we haven't fully covered everything, where we need to start winding down. But this is also a point where we can jump off those last little things that we haven't mentioned yet. So to do this, we are going to, well, I guess let me say that we all obviously enjoyed this movie a lot. We probably have very few criticisms, but it's time to talk about those few criticisms that we did have with our come on moments. So, Wade, on Skype, you get to go first and make Griffin suffer.
No, I like Griffin. You go first, man.
Okay.
And then if it's really good, I'll say, oh, that was, I was about to say that too.
Yeah, that's my thing is like, my thing always gets taken, quote unquote. So I'm like always,
Skype in. Stop living so close to me. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Stay close.
I'll move away.
Please don't.
They didn't develop. Okay. They paid Emily Van Camp to come be Agent 13, Sharon Carter,
mm-hmm.
you know, Peggy Carter's granddaughter. They paid,
or whatever she is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
She will. I mean, she's the same thing. I mean, I guess they didn't even say her name.
Say her last name.
Really?
She's not. She's only billed as Peggy. No, she's only billed as Sharon.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But I mean, I think it's common knowledge that
I mean, there's like a fling. I mean, they have a deep history mm-hmm. in the comics of like dating and marrying. I think at one point, you know, just all sorts of stuff. But the fact that they paid this person to come on and then they didn't develop that character at all. I'm just like, what are you doing, Marvel? And I think the same, and I'm just going to say this again, the same is true for Bucky. I just, as much as they fast tracked it in this movie and I was like, I'm okay with this. I want to know what they're doing. I mean, they're introducing these concepts really, that they could do a lot more with. I think they're just missing a lot of opportunities with some of these characters. But I will say that whenever it comes to Sam Wilson, they developed that in a small way, and it didn't feel weird that he was there.
And you're talking about the Falcon.
Yeah, the Falcon. It didn't feel weird that he was there.
Yeah.
They never called him the Falcon, did they?
Yeah. They said something like that when he handed him the.
He's like Codename Falcon or something.
Codename Falcon, something like that.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, like, I feel like they developed that enough to, like, mm-hmm. okay, I understand why this guy's here. But yeah, I just wish that they would take more care of developing some of these people that they pay to come and be on the movies. I mean, and I guess part of it's like we're going for the long, they're playing the long con, and I get that.
Well, I mean, you know, we didn't get a lot of Black Widow in the Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
We didn't get a developed Black Widow. We just got, hey, here's a girl that likes to kick people in the face and wear spandex. That's all you need to know.
And it's Scarlett Johansson.
And Scarlett Johansson.
You're not going to complain.
In tight leather pants. So you don't really need to know her backstory.
Yeah.
So... I mean, but I can jive with that. I really wish there was. Obviously, she was there for a reason.
But if but yeah,
she had more than one line, yeah, she had more lines than Abed.
And that, I mean, it's clear that I'm not upset about the movie because mm-hmm. that's my thing. Is that they didn't develop some character that isn't really all that important currently in the mm-hmm. Marvel universe. So, yeah.
So I mean, I love the movie. There were a couple things. I felt like the first time I watched the plot, it's very complicated, which in some ways is good because, like I said, I felt like Avengers was a little simplified. I do think that they could have maybe simplified the plot a little bit. When Hydra comes in, it's like your mind is just kind of like there's just so much. Now, when I watched it the second time, I was like, it was even better because I was like, okay, now I understand every little detail that's going on. So maybe simplify it a little bit. And then at the end when... You know, where they had the carriers that were going to target thousands of people at once. I felt like that was a little much. It was like, okay, you know, like they're going to kill a bunch, like millions of people at once or, you know.
Instantaneously, basically.
Yeah, so I thought that was a little too much. But at the same time, it's a comic book film and that stuff happens. You know, you have these ships that are going to shoot the president and Bruce Banner, whatever, Doctor Strange, you know, all these different people that they've been watching, you know, they're just going to take them out at once. So it's a comic book character. So I would say maybe those two things. But you know, I feel like those are small criticisms, given that it is a comic book film.
Well, I would actually that's kind of mine. Like as much as
I see how it is.
I roll.
No, I mean, well, that's what I put.
It was either the Sharon Carter thing or the Quaid thing. I get it.
I have it right here in my notes.
Yeah.
I said a little outlandish. Because, see, here's the thing. Like, with the spy thriller thing, I was completely with that. I love the fact that they took on this different genre and the fact that they're using Captain America outside of just superhero genre. They're taking these other film type things and applying a superhero element to it.
When I never like if one chip can take down an entire. It's like there's one tiny chip.
If I don't put the chip in there, then thousands of people, including the president, will die.
Jeez, so, one chip, huh?
As someone who works in IT, I almost stopped trying to pay attention due to frustration levels. Of how easy it is to like zoom in and clarify and hack. It's like, oh, I'm just going to upload the virus down a backdoor channel. No, you won't. That's not how that works.
Yeah. It's like their shield. Like, hopefully they have a little bit better firewall than like your average grandma sitting on her, you know, Windows 98 PC.
who designed these helicarriers? Okay. So what we're going to do is our entire targeting system is going to be in this completely open dome, only surrounded by glass on the bottom of the helicarrier.
Yeah.
The same person who designed the Death Star. That's who designed this.
The Death Star. There's one hole.
Yeah, you might cover that exhaust port because it could be a problem if someone shoots in there.
That's why Robot Chicken is hilarious. But so that was my thing. The concept of like if the helicarriers were going to rain down destruction, I think that would have been more believable. But when they told me what the plan was, I kind of felt like I didn't understand what they said. Because to me, it was unreasonable for me to believe that the bad guys could ever do this thing.
Well, it's like they...
There's no way they're going to kill 22 million people.
Well, the threat was real. And almost, it was like too real. At that point, it was like, this threat's... way too big.
Well, I also had a problem with like three carriers that are basically is it Washington D.C. or New York, whichever
it was D.C. that they were
D.C.
Yeah. So three carriers who are not even really in orbit are able to kill people around the Earth. I mean, like, think about the curvature of the Earth and what kind of bullets you're firing. I mean, like, seriously, like.
Well, I guess science. they were gonna do the East Coast and then just keep flying around, like just be a swarm of killer bees or something, just kind of like float around shooting people. Is that how it was, or was it just from that area?
Well, the way they said they were gonna target everyone in a snap of a fingers, basically Robert Redford was saying we could wipe out like 6 million people, you know. And I was like, that's not gonna happen. So I. Kind of like in some movies, the bad guys actually kind of get their plan to happen, but then ultimately something either can take it back or make it better or fix it. That never happens. Like, I knew that wasn't going to happen. They weren't going to kill 22 million people and then take it back.
Yeah.
So, but with all that said, really enjoyed the movie. Favorite moments.
If it's all right, I'll go first.
Yes,
take it away.
The fact that we did not get to everything we could have talked about with this film it just goes to show you how good of a film it was for a superhero film. There's so much to talk about. Two things. I love the chemistry between Scarlett Johansson and Chris Evans. I don't know the comics. I kind of wanted them to get together, but just the sarcasm between them, I thought that was really well done. I did notice near the end of the film that Scarlett Johansson was wearing a silver necklace with an arrow on it, and so I figured she's going to get together with Hawkeye.
That is comics.
Yeah. So I was a little disappointed, but their chemistry was great. So I love that part of the film, and I wrote about this in my review. I love in between movie or a television series, like between the season cliffhanger and the premiere for the next season. I love to see what happened in that time frame, and I really like that about Captain America, to see what happened, what changed in his world, with Peggy Carter, and just to see the transition. I thought that was well done. You know, it's him kind of battling the past and kind of moving on with his life while facing the new future. So I felt like they did a really good job of that. So those, you know, my two favorite things about the film.
So you think maybe when Avengers 2 starts, whenever Captain America or Steve Rogers gets the Avengers Assemble call, he might be like out getting shawarma with Sharon or something like that? Yeah, that'll be his season 3 premiere or whatever?
No, Marvel's not going to move that fast. They're not gonna.
They haven't developed that game.
Yeah, they're gonna do that till number 3. I mean, they're gonna be slow. Like even in Avengers, you didn't really get a lot of Captain America coming back from being frozen. You know, he's just you start to get into that stuff in the second movie. So they're gonna be careful. They're gonna string us along for a while.
Well, it's almost like the Avengers movies happen right after, you know, the end of the previous movie. Yeah, the character.
I could see that happening. Yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and we sound weird, everything is very delayed in our ears. Yeah, for some reason
something just happened on the recording. But okay, so Griffin, what was your favorite part?
The action scene sequences of this movie,
were great,
and I think that. I think that it's just great to watch how Marvel has developed from Iron Man 1 to Iron Man 2 to, you know, to all these movies. I mean, I think it's just gotten really just infinitely better over time. And I think that gives like a lot of hope for me to watch, like, how are they going to do this going forward? I mean, to introduce something like Ultron is such a difficult character because he is so powerful. I think it'll be so great. To see just them take that character and say, here's our best whenever it comes to action sequences.
That will be cool. I did also like the action sequence. I like that even though we talked about this earlier, the World War II kind of montage action scene is very period piece kind of thing and very appropriate for the first Captain America movie. Seeing Captain America, it's almost like watching Batman in action. Mm-hmm. You know, people were like, oh, he's not really a superhero. Even though Captain America is a super soldier, you know, he still can be shot and killed. You know, Iron Man can usually take bullets, lots of bullets. You know, you're not going to shoot Thor. You know, the Hulk is just going to spit out bullets, apparently. You know, Captain America is the closest thing outside of Tony Stark without his armor to human.
Mm-hmm.
And to see him become super in some of these action scenes, like taking on the jet, running 30 or 40 miles an hour, like around the boat, using his shield in more creative ways than I've ever seen a shield even thought to be used before. Those are all great. And it really made the movie more enjoyable because it really made me think that Captain America wasn't just a pretty good soldier or a decent fighter. Like, he has the chops. He really is.
He deserves awesome. To be on the Avengers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just there because he can create a good plan. You know, he's not just Hannibal. He's the brains and the brawn. Mm. So once again, another reason why I think he's probably the most interesting Avenger at this point.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I really loved, and I'll put one or two of these in the show notes, but there were just so many little Easter eggs everywhere. Like, there were previews to Guardians of the Galaxy. There was previews to Avengers 2, Captain America 3, throwbacks to Iron Man 2. I just made up Guardians of the Galaxy. It was the first one on my tongue.
They do so much with, like, the TV show and, like, keeping...
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to quickly say something about this, and then I'm going to stop.
Okay.
As much as they've done with the Marvel Universe, ABC has done nothing.
Nothing.
With S.H.I.E.L.D.
No.
And I hate it that they've wasted that money and time into that show. But I'm glad that Captain America, the Winter Soldier, dealt with some of the things that had happened in the show and made it have a point.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I like that Easter egg. Even though I couldn't see a point in it after the show being so horrible.
Yeah.
And I promise that me talking weird is literally that I can't hear things correctly. And so I apologize, humans.
Well, that's the thing. It gives it a lot of replay value. Like, I enjoyed this movie a lot the first time I saw it. I enjoyed it more the second time I saw it because I caught things that I didn't catch the first time.
Yeah.
And I think if I watch it a third time, there will be even more.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, with that, we will, for now, end our discussion, our mm-hmm. audible discussion of this movie. But I hope that conversation continues. There's lots of places for that to happen. So, to thank my guests for being here, for taking their time to talk about this movie with me, for having an incredibly fun conversation, I like to give them a chance to basically pimp anything they want to pimp. So, Wade, tell people how they can get a hold of you, they can see your work, they can be involved in anything you're doing. Go.
I would love for you guys to hit me up on my website, wadebearden.com, where it's all about Wade. I deal with film and theology and stuff, basically where culture and theology collide. And so I do that, wadebearden.com. Subscribe to my blog. I'd love it. You can also catch me on christandpopculture.com. I contribute to the film section there. And so we do some weekly stuff. So hit me up on there. Subscribe to my blog, wadebearden.com. And I just want to say this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for inviting me on, Fizz. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Griffin?
If you're looking to check anything out, I'm also the most important person at my own website, griffinkell.com. And I slowly blog and post, and I'm serializing a novel once again slowly. I've decided that this week at some point, as soon as I post the next chapter, I'm going to talk about why I'm going to be posting so slow to that. But I also want to quickly pimp something. If you liked Captain America Winter Soldier and you are interested in comics, I say this about every one that we talk about, the comic book movies. I would love it if you would check out these two stories. One's Captain America Winter Soldier by Ed Brubaker. There's a trade. It's about 30 issues thick, and it's a great little story about all of this in the comic form. And then if you liked the side of things with S.H.I.E.L.D. being Hydra and there being a conspiracy there, there's a great book called Secret Warriors, created by Jonathan Hickman and Brian Michael Bendis, that you should check out. And both of those books are top recommendations. Captain America by Brubaker is widely considered the bringing back of Bucky is widely considered one of the best comic book stories of all time. When you talk about mainstream Marvel DC comics. So to check those out would be great. And follow me on Twitter at Griffin or at Griffin underscore Kale. I'm on Facebook, those things. I don't really do anything on those forums right now. I'm really bad about social media.
You're only Instagramming.
I'm really not even Instagramming.
Really?
Yeah. I don't do anything right now on social media. I'm terrible at it. So
I'm okay. Just write.
I'm trying.
All right, good. Yeah. Well, if you missed any of that, there will be links to all this in the show notes, which you can find at the site that I'll tell you about in a second. But thanks so much for joining us on this episode. If you want to keep the discussion going, which we highly encourage, then please follow at Real World Theo on Twitter. Or if you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, then visit our website, realworldtheology.com. That's R-E-E-L, worldtheology.com. Connect with us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you enjoy it, review the show, leave us some feedback, tell your friends, and let's get more people involved in the conversation. Again, I just want to thank my guests for being here. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you guys very much.
I want to thank you, the listeners, for taking time to make us part of your week. And until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.